Well, first of all, I'd like to take this opportunity of wishing you a very happy Christmas. I hope that you're going to have a really delightful Christmas and one that fits the gospel. Actually, I'm sort of wondering whether I might not spoil it for you, but still, perhaps that might be a good thing these days. I'm not really quite sure, because I want to talk about some of the ways in which I think we tend to get Christmas back to front, or upside down, or inside out, or something. Maybe if we could begin to look at it in a different way, it might mean different things for us. Maybe things that bring it to new life. Because I suspect that a lot of the shenanigans that surround our Christmas these days, this enormous pressure on new entertainment and new decoration and new ways of giving presents and all this kind of thing, is due to some extent with the fact that somehow we have become bored with Christmas itself. And therefore we've got to kind of find ways of jipping it up a bit. Now, I can't believe that the boredom is actually to do with Christmas itself. What's happened is that maybe we've lost touch with some of the realities. I mean, let's begin with this very common idea that Christmas is for the children. Now, there's a sacred cow, if you like. Of course Christmas is for the children. So come to that is Easter for the children, and Harvest Festival for the children, and every Sunday for the children. Of course it is. The question is whether Christmas is so specially for the children that adults, we can all sort of spend our time giving the children a good time and then smiling benevolently at their pleasures. And I sometimes wonder whether they get the right sort of pleasures all the time. Smiling benevolently on them and feeling that we have done our bit towards peace and goodwill at Christmas. Because when you look at the Bible story about Christmas, it doesn't seem to me that it's for children much at all. In fact, now come to think of it, the children in the original story get a pretty raw deal, don't they? I mean, the only specific child to begin with in the actual Christmas story gets a raw deal. I wouldn't imagine that even as a baby we would particularly appreciate being stuck in the straw with the smell of the animals around and the bustle of a full inn and general neglect and not much of a health service and so on. See, really, in that Christmas time, the baby got a pretty raw deal. And you'll recall that if we include in that whole affair what happened with the wise men and all the rest of it, there were a lot of other babies in Bethlehem up to the age of two, which is just about, for children, who had a very raw deal indeed. It doesn't seem to me that the first Christmas was particularly for children. And I'm wondering whether we haven't domesticated Christmas. We had a simply delightful crib service outside the parish church on Christmas Eve, and it was great fun, and it was also, a terrific atmosphere about it, and I, for one, found myself singing a carol with all sorts of new meanings. And in fact, I think it was the atmosphere of devotion and the sense of certain reality about that occasion which perhaps increased my own sensitivity. Because at one point, we take it for granted, don't we? There was going to be the angel's song, sung by the children. Now, just you think about angels for a moment. Remember the story. What was it now? Luke chapter 2. There they were in the fields taking care of their flocks. Tough, seasoned men, used to hardship and danger, the sort of characters who till the fields and look out and keep the lions off and all this kind of thing, and there they are, And the angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were terrified. Angels terrifying them. Now, you know, what have we done when we think of these terrifying creatures being portrayed as children? It's true that there are situations in which children, and I'm not thinking of the ones which will make us smile, can terrify us. It can terrify us when we see them and we have a sudden sense of the responsibility of looking after a being that is destined for eternity. Oh yeah, they could be terrified, but I don't think that's what was meant here. I sometimes wonder whether we ought not to choose for the angels' song the biggest, the most impressive, the most bruiser-like characters that we can find. It surely would be nearer the mark. But we domesticate angels, don't we? Actually, and I'm sure my wife won't mind this, I mentioned to her about this feeling, and she said, well, they're supposed to be cherubs. Fair enough, you know. Immediately, right? The word cherub suggests to you, doesn't it? You know, one of these little flying babies. So seraphim and cherubim are there. See? They're little cherubim flying babies about. This word cherub, it's a Bible word. And the Bible word is an Old Testament Bible word, originally. And the Bible word was kerub, from which our word cherub comes. You know what a kerub was? Well, if you go into the parish church and you sit down in the main part of it, you look up, you see a coat of arms. And there's Dieu et mon droit. And one thing that worries me is that the Dieu is always spelt wrong, but that's I'm sure that must be old French or something. But the point is that supporting the two coats of the coat of arms are two figures, a lion and a unicorn, and they are figures that are there in the pride of their royalty. See? Now the ancient world had figures like that, heraldic figures that were symbols of royalty and power and sovereignty, something to be afraid of. And those figures were called cherubim, cherubim. See what we have done to our cherubs? The figure that was once something that men trembled at has become a flying baby. And when we say Christmas is for children, I think the same process of thinking has taken place, that an event which has changed the course of history has become something for the children. Part of that process, of course, is due to the fact that we have also sentimentalized children. They don't sentimentalize themselves, we do it. And we turn them into, as we call them, little angels, and, well, everybody knows it isn't really true. And that process, as a matter of fact, is a relatively recent one. I suppose that it's only since the mid-Victorian period that children have been given that rather unrealistic status in human life. Before that, they were simply people who were going to be adults. You see, I think a lot of this has changed the way then that we participate in Christmas, because it's so easy for us then to participate in Christmas with emotions that are merely domestic. Ah, the dear little things opening their presents. The Christmas tree. The fairy lights, you see? The Santa Claus, all the rest of it. Now, I mean, I love Santa Claus, I think it's a great institution. But it has to be in its place. It certainly isn't a dominant factor in the situation. And the result is that our feelings about Christmas become bland. And we have lost touch, I think, with what... We've seen that hymn, Come All Ye Faithful, Joyful and Triumphant, Triumphantist. You know, it's got a soul-expanding view, hasn't it? Now, I know that, of course, we were to take the original of that, because it's in Latin, triumphantis, doesn't mean quite what it means today. But it's near enough to lead for a Roman general to receive a triumph meant that the whole of Rome felt the impact of it. That's not for children just, is it? Mind you, I like to see children triumph, but it's an adult attitude, that. Think of that next verse. Is it third verse? Sing, choirs of angels. Sing in exaltation. Sing, all ye citizens of heaven above. Exaltation. Isn't there a time for men and women at Christmas time to share in that, what is it that's going on throughout the whole of nature, throughout the stars, throughout the universe, the galaxies, this word that sums it up, doesn't it? Exaltation, the leaping of the heart of the universe. And you sit around our Christmas tree and think that is what Christmas is about. Christmas is about a victory. A tremendous, shattering victory that affects the whole of the creation and the universe beyond the universe. Now, let's take another thing quickly, because, I mean, this is carol service and I'm not supposed to spiel on. I wished you a happy Christmas, and I noticed quite a few people smiled and said, well, it's a bit late, so, and I think the look on their faces was to suggest it's all over. There's a carol that, of course, we don't sing in church, but we ought to sing it in church, just occasionally, perhaps, to remind ourselves of something. On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a partridge in a pear tree. On the second day of Christmas, what is it my true love gives to me? Two turtle doves and a partridge in a pear tree. The third day of Christmas,
three French hens.
The fourth day of Christmas,
four
colic birds. The fifth day of Christmas, five. Yeah, the sixth day of Christmas, seventh day of Christmas, eighth day of Christmas. Getting on, aren't we? The ninth day of Christmas. We're beginning to get run out, aren't we? Was it the nine? That's right. Nine Lord a leaping. That's right. Right. Tenth day of Christmas. Ten Lord. Wait a minute. Where's the maids? Yeah, ladies dancing. That's the one. Maids are milking, isn't it? Right. 11th day of Christmas. That's, is it? Yeah. And the 12th day of Christmas. Right. Now, when does the first day of Christmas start? Christmas Day. So, you've got 10 days of Christmas still to come. Huh? See what the world has done with this, haven't they? They've started Christmas at Easter. Because that's when the things are manufactured and when the publicity blurb has to be prepared. And by Christmas Day, everybody is so exhausted that it's supposed to be all over. Not so, folks. Christmas Day begins Christmas. Now, I'm not suggesting, of course, that we should follow the example of the carol exactly and step up the giving boom right up to the 12th day. I mean, it's bad enough for one day. Hello, finding things for people for 12 days. And yet, you see, surely at the back of this carol is a suggestion, is there not, that Christmas Day is to be the beginning of giving and not the end of it? That it is to be the beginning of reconciliation and not the end of it? That it is to be the beginning of loving rather than the end of it, where we have not loved before. And what we have turned it into is one big boost of effort. And then by Boxing Day, we can say, right, now let's get back into the old fielding again. And we can send the relatives packing, and we can get down to the ordinary things. And there are all those days of Christmas still to follow. And I guess that if we could keep up the attitudes which we cultivate very specially for Christmas Day for 12 days, it might even become a habit for the rest of the year. I'm not sure it would be a costly habit, because we would, every now and then we would find ourselves apologising for our beastliness, and other times we would find ourselves repenting for our self-centeredness and all the rest of it. But surely that is what Christmas is about. We've got it round the wrong way. Mind you, I think maybe this problem about giving would point us out to something else. Maybe this is important too. We say Christmas is about giving. Well, we may grant that. But it is a question whether, in fact, the essence of Christmas is not in receiving. It may be more blessed to give than to receive, but it is often a jolly sight more difficult to receive than to give. I think probably some of us, if not all of us this Christmas, have had at least one, maybe, experience of receiving something we didn't want, somehow having to be very sweetly appreciative. Well, let us say it has happened, has it not? Receiving is quite a difficult art, and one which is worth learning at Christmas time. Because, see, we talk about God giving his son, and that's true. But let's look at it from this point of view. His son is God becoming a receiver. There he is in a babe, in a manger, receiving the care of a mother and a father, dependent for every breath on their thought and care, dependent on them for food, dependent on an innkeeper for a manger to lie in. And he lives out a human life in this unbelievable dependence on human beings and dependence on God, his Father. I mean, it's worth thinking about, isn't it, that in fact, you all receive before you give. We didn't make ourselves. We did not bring ourselves into this world. We did not bring ourselves up. We did not begin feeding ourselves. What have you, says the apostle, that you did not first receive? And this is what the gospel is about. It's got to be that way round. And it's still true that Christmas begins where meek souls, that is to say, souls that admit their dependence and their need, and face the fact that none of us are self-made men. Otherwise, as Dr. Johnson said, well, we would relieve the Almighty of a great responsibility. But none of us are self-made men or women. We receive, in the first instance, what we are. And if you and I are going to be any use to God or to man before we start giving, we have to receive. We have to admit our helplessness and our need and our bewilderment and our lostness and the uselessness of our own cussed way of living. The way that we all go our own way all the time by instinct. And we have to receive from him a life that begins helplessly in a manger, dependent on the living God, and often dependent on each other. See, we get it round the wrong way, don't we? In the end, we don't really give. We pass on. Right? God gives. And we pass it on. And the kingdom of heaven is a kingdom
which lives by keeping the gifts of God in circulation. If we don't keep it in circulation, then we may become like the Dead Sea that receives millions of tons of water every day and passes nothing on. Christmas is first of all a matter of giving, and then of receiving, and then not giving as if we might say, look what I have done, look how generous I was, look how kind I was, look how, but of passing on what has been given to us. And that passing on begins, and only really begins with power and meaning, when we receive Christ. Whatever you may feel about being a Christian or not being a Christian or anything else, it is going to start for you when you deal with Jesus Christ as a person whom you are going to welcome into your life so that there he may take control.